Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Edward James Olmos is best known for his roles in the revived Battlestar Galactica, the original Miami Vice, and Stand and Deliver, for which he was nominated for an Oscar. Our audience might know him best from the PBS series American Family, Journey of Dreams, which follows a Latino family in Los Angeles. He's the winner of Golden Globes and Emmys. In addition to acting and directing, Edward James Olmos is known for his activism. He's a big supporter of bringing people together. He was in town last night to give the Cesar Chavez lecture at UMKC. He joins us in just a minute. Later on this hour, where were the investigative journalists prior to the economic collapse of 2008? A new book takes a look. But first up, actor, director, and activist Edward James Olmos. And so nice to have you in Kansas City. Welcome.
It's a pleasure, Stephen. Thank you very much for having us.
You know, sci-fi fans know you best for Battlestar Galactica. What's it like being at the center of a project with such a devoted, or maybe the word is rabid, fan base?
I can honestly say that the usage of television is, goes in a lot of different ways for when you're watching it.
Yeah.
But when I got onto the show, and I didn't know that this was going to happen, but I must tell you that when I read the script, the very first script, I said, oh, my Lord, this is really in-depth and understanding of what it's doing. And so I jumped on, and I have to tell you, I think it's the best usage of television I've ever been a part of. And I have done some really work on TV.
Yes, you have.
You know, so
but why is it the best?
Story.
Mm-hmm.
The story itself, what it's doing with the medium and what we, you know, are talking about. You know, mm-hmm. It's entertaining, but it's also very socially relevant.
What do you make, though, of the fans and the enthusiasm? I mean, it's got to be something. You went through Miami Vice, so you know a little bit about enthusiastic fans, but this is something altogether different, isn't it?
I think so. I did Blade Runner, which really has a tremendous
following,
an impact on people. And so I was kind of understanding of this world already.
Yeah.
It's nothing more than just gratitude. That's it. People are very, very grateful that they got to experience what they experienced. That's what they love. Conventions are extraordinary. They have one here. I came here for mm-hmm. one convention.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing. It's really amazing. People just want to talk to you and say thank you.
Yeah.
And that's the best way to say thank you. I mean, people will ask me for autographs and stuff like that, but mainly what they want to do is talk. And so we sit there and we talk.
What do they ask you? What do they want to know?
Basically, you know, they just want to know, they want to say thank you to me for the hours and hours and hours and days of entertainment that I've given them in this field.
Mm-hmm.
They really appreciate the world that we take them to. And I must say that in this case, even the UN appreciated it. I mean, I don't know if you know, we went to the UN and spoke at the UN.
Huh.
And, the only modern-day television ever to be asked to go and speak to the entire planet. And this was back in 2009. And it was very, very it struck me when I was invited to go to the UN. Mary McDonnell and myself and the two producers were asked to come and,
mm-hmm.
and partake. And we 3.5 hours of talking about the show
mm-hmm.
And about the ideas and the values and the situations that were portrayed on the show. And, you know, we dealt with children in war. We dealt with suicide bombing.
Sure.
We dealt with reconciliation and, you know, about 5 different subject matters.
Yeah.
And then the executive directors of each subject matter that deals with this problem on the planet right now, that in this case it was 2009, they spoke for 20 minutes. And we spoke for, you know, we answered questions. So they would show a clip for about 4 or 5 minutes, and then they would speak for 20 minutes on what the UN felt about what this situation projected.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And then they would ask us questions. And so that was the basis of it. That was the foundation of how we worked there. And it was amazing. It was just stunning, especially when we got into, you know, suicide bombings and when we got into right to life, right to choose. we got into children
into
in
it.
War. Well, look at the subject matters.
So gratifying too, right?
Oh, God,
To be recognized in that way by an august body like the UN.
Most people that are listening to us right now haven't seen the show.
Mm-hmm.
So they're saying, What? Yeah. You're at the UN?
Is he talking
about the United Nations?
Yeah.
Battlestar Galactica. Yeah. Yeah. The only television show that's ever been asked to go to the UN, ever in the history of the UN.
I mean, do you ever, you know, fret that the – I'm sure you're recognized a lot for your role on that show. Do you ever sort of fret that your other work has been overshadowed as a result of your work on that show?
No. It's all different. I mean, people who really appreciate the most viewed piece of work that I've ever done is Stand and Deliver.
Mm-hmm.
Stand and Deliver has the accolade of being the most viewed film of all films ever made in the United States of America in the United States.
How so?
Well, more people have seen that than have seen Jaws or
is
Raiders
right?
or Star Wars or, Avatar, big movies that come out, and you know, people, you know, 5 million or 12 million or 15 million people see these shows. You know?
Yeah.
Well, ours is way off the chart because it's been out for 25 years, and I'll bet you that almost everybody that's seen that movie probably saw it in high school or junior high.
That's probably right.
Okay, by a teacher that said, "Here, you got to see this."
Yeah.
And you know, they saw it in school. So it's been used now by tens of thousands of teachers every year to expose it to hundreds, if not millions of people, kids, every year.
And that movie connected why?
Story.
Mm-hmm.
Simple story.
It's always story. Yeah.
It's always story. I mean, we're storytellers, and basically what it's come about is, it was a story that was based on reality. It was truth. And it became a situation that people could understand.
Remind us in a sentence or two the plot of it.
Sure.
Yeah.
This happened in 1983. A immigrant teacher from Bolivia came here and started to teach at an inner city school.
That's right.
In East L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a school that was losing its accreditation. And he ended up turning the school, the entire school and the entire community, and then the entire state, if not the entire country,
that's right. Now it's coming
onto this incredible ability that these students who were in a very difficult position, because basically they didn't want to, the school was being completely closed down, and yet these students were still there. So it was like nobody cared about them.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was supposed to teach computer science, but they had no computers. So he ended up having to teach remedial math, 101, math 101. And he ended up saying, and he went into the classroom, and within 3 years, he changed that system, and he got them. And the end of the third year, he had his students taking the advanced placement test in calculus, AP calculus, 18 of them. They scored so high that the Educational Testing Service out of Princeton ended up considering that they had to have cheated. They cheated, period. And he said to them, and it's a classic scene there with me and Andy Garcia, in which we, and it's all true. It's all factual. See, you got to remember, I wrote that script. The original script was written by the producer and the director. But when I talked to Jaime Escalante, the teacher that actually did it, he says, "Well, it's a good movie." And I said, "Oh, you don't think it's very accurate?" And he says, "Well, it's a good movie." Because I asked him if he liked the script before we started shooting. And I said, "Well, then what is it?" And he says, "Well, for instance, when I came walking into the school, and then I started saying, wait a minute." And I started to write what he was telling me. So I started to rewrite the script from page one. And we rewrote the entire script from page one in 6 days. Wow. And the script that you see and that you saw was that performance was him. He was there every day. So he was like, I would watch him. First of all, I studied him for almost a year. And so it was a really contribution. It was like, if imitation is the highest flattery, then I imitated him to the highest level of my abilities as an artist. Because basically, it was really trying to get the feeling of what it was with this one single human being that could drive students and kids that had no ambition to becoming capable of handling, if not one of the... It's one of the hardest examinations we give in the United States of America. Less than 3% of all the students that are capable of taking the test take it.
Yeah, yeah.
And less than 3% of them that take it pass it. So it's a very difficult exam.
Where is he today?
He passed away about 2 years ago. And it's been this hardest thing. And it just makes me almost tear up right now, and I can break down.
Yeah.
Because his last class, he taught 250 students and prepared them for that test. Now, I don't want to even begin to tell you how hard that exam is. I don't want to begin to tell you how much focus and concentration when you're a high school student to take that examination takes. But to motivate 250, one person, 250 students at one time to take that examination out of one school, I don't even know where to begin. That's how – but what happened is he built a legacy. So everybody that came into his classroom was going all the way.
They knew what that was about.
They signed contracts. He would sign a contract with the students. They'd come in and sign a contract that they would do this, and their parents had to sign it. And he started this back in the day when he started the whole thing. It's really amazing.
And so he's passed away, and I imagine we failed to bottle up whatever it was that he was selling so that we could pass it on to – teachers across the country. Right?
No, just the opposite. That's what the movie does.
Mm-hmm.
The movie was the bottle.
Mm-hmm.
There are teachers all over this country that say thank you to me more than you'll ever know. That say, you know what? When I place that movie and I show it at the beginning of my class year, from the moment I step on that up there and start to speak, I have to hit a level of expectation and understanding. Okay, because now I've shown them this teacher. I've shown them the situation. So now we're all going to take the ride. And not only mathematics teachers use it, but English teachers use it, history teachers use it. It's a basis of understanding fundamental discipline and understanding, you know, the decision to really take advantage of the time together between a student and a teacher.
Edward James Almos is our guest. He spoke in Kansas City last night. You've had a really long career in TV and film, but you started in the theater. Why the theater?
I couldn't get a job anywhere else. And literally, I started off at my first year of college. I was 17 years old, and I took my very first acting class. And I did it because I was a rock and roll singer. And the year was 1964.
I was going to ask you about that, yeah.
And I had been singing rock and roll since 1960. And I was 14 years old when I started singing rock and roll. And I sang rock and roll all through high school. And then I put myself through college singing rock and roll. And, you know, it was amazing. I would work all night. Well, not all night. I'd work until 2 o'clock in the morning, 1:30, 2 o'clock. And then I'd go to school the next morning around 8 o'clock to start the 8 o'clock class.
So you were good enough to make a living, to pay for school and all that.
I worked... on the Sunset Strip for 8 consecutive years nonstop, 7 days a week. I never took a day off. And who wanted to take a day off of singing rock and roll? Are you kidding me?
And that was fun.
Oh, yeah. I stayed in a nightclub called Gazzari's on the Sunset Strip, and we followed the Doors. The Doors had been there for 6 months before we had gotten there. They held the record. And at that time, the Doors were still not quite the Doors, but they were becoming the Doors, you know. And so we walked in there, and we stayed there for 4 years, four consecutive years, and set the world record until we left. And then Van Halen came in, and they stayed for 4 years and 1 week.
They show it to you, right?
That's exactly why they did it.
Oh, that's funny. Do you ever give Eddie Van Halen a hard time about that?
Oh, no, I mean, he laughs. We all laugh because, I mean, most people don't understand what that means.
Yeah.
They really don't get it. And they said, come on, you can't sit. I'm listening to this guy tell me he sang rock and roll for, you know, 4 consecutive years at Gazzari's 7 days a week. Yeah, that's what we did. And you know, because it's like what I don't understand is that, you know, most people really – what did you think that, you know, the great basketball players came out of their mother's womb bouncing the ball and, you know, that's how they learned
it? Didn't really work that way.
No, man. They have over 10,000 hours placed by the time they're 10 years old.
Yeah.
They've put in 10,000 hours. If you put 10,000 hours into something, you're going to be really, really good at it.
Yeah.
And what it is the discipline to be able to do that every day, 7 days a week, like you brush your teeth.
Mm-hmm.
If you can brush your teeth every day, 7 days a week.
you get pretty good at it.
And guess what? That means you can use the same discipline you used to do that, which I don't think you love to do. You just have to do it into something that you love to do. Yeah. And, you know, that to me is the key.
You know, you're one of the best-known Hispanic actors out there. How important is it for you to represent Latinos in popular media and do it in the way that you want to do it?
You know, it's not so much that I have to do it for the culture. I'm really doing it for myself, okay? But I happen to be Latino.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the hyphen is something that was given to me. And a lot of my peers don't like it. A lot of Latino actors say, how come they don't say, look, here's that great Jewish-American actor, Dustin Hoffman? Or how come they don't say, oh, that great Italian-American actor, Al Pacino?
Yeah.
They don't do that. They don't put hyphens. But they do for us. And I say I kind of like it myself personally. Personally,
because
I like being Latino. I am.
Mm-hmm.
Steven.
Yeah.
What am I?
if but, I'm not but you Latino. Like being known that way.
Of course I do. Mm-hmm. I mean, because that's who I am and that's what I am. And all of a sudden people are looking at me saying, oh, well, this Latino actor is playing, you know, a Caucasian person. Oh, this Latino actor is playing, you know, I'm a character actor. So, you know, basically I've developed characters that are multi-ethnic.
Yeah,
my ethnicity on Blade Runner is monumental. I mean, people have said, wow, you're way ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
Because we did that in 1980.
Well, you're happy being identified as Latino, but you're not happy with the representation of Latinos on film, TV, and theater because why? The numbers, right?
Yeah. I mean, we're over 17%, actually over 18% of the population in this country.
And yet...
we're less than 4% of the images that we see on the screen. And, you know, people say, well, it's okay. You know, we see, you know, Andy Garcia. We see Jim Smits. We see Jennifer Lopez. But I said, yeah, but you got to realize something. The stories that we're telling, for instance, Argo, that was a Latino story. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Of course not.
No.
Nobody did.
Mm-hmm.
Because Ben Affleck made him non-cultural. He just didn't care about the culture. He said it didn't matter because Tony Mendez, that's the real character's name, Tony Mendez, which I think they say once in passing in the movie so that nobody even catches it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the character he played, okay? And he came out, I guess he says in his mind that Tony, and Tony's very verbal about it, Tony, first of all, that's one of the great stories, Latino stories of all time. And they used it, and no one even knew that it was a Latino doing the contribution.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, man. This is about – look, I'll ask you this, Stephen. Name me one United States national hero that you have studied any time in your life, male or female, born in the United States of America, of Latin descent. Show me one. Just tell me one.
Yeah.
Anyone. Or better yet, tell me one – United States national hero, born in the United States of America, male or female, that you've studied of Asian ancestry.
Yeah. Okay.
Tell me. You can't.
Yeah.
Because
there
are none. And people on the radio right now going, hey, wait a minute. Cesar Chavez. Hey, wait a minute.
Yeah.
You know, Inoue from Hawaii. You know, these are Asians. These are Latinos that we say, no, we don't. I wish we did.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that if it wasn't for Martin Luther King, there is not one person of color that we say thank you to as a nation? It's the only single human being of color that we say as a nation, once a year, for at least 5 minutes, we say, thank you, Martin Luther King, for being alive. And that took an act of God in this country.
Mm-hmm.
But yet European cultures, oh, my God.
Name every, it. Right, yeah.
Where do you want to start?
Well, we're there because why still? I mean, in 2014, we're still there. Why?
Okay, let's go into the educational systems. Okay, when you go to school and you study from the first grade through the 12th grade, European American studies, from the first grade to 12th grade, that's mandatory. Okay, you study the contributions of the Europeans to the United States of America. Nothing wrong with that. Tremendous applause I give to that.
Mm-hmm.
The difficulty is that they don't give any time for any other cultures. You have less than one semester of Native American studies. You have less than one semester, maybe two, if you're in a region that is predominantly a culture, say Latino, you will get somebody, teachers in there teaching about that. But that's not a national forum.
Mm-hmm.
That's just in this one area.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, you know, I got to tell you, the difficulty is that we've never been able to balance the sense of contributions. Imagine self-esteem, self-respect, and self-worth being the single most important aspect of living.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a great sense of self-worth, you're going to live a pretty good life. You don't want anything to happen to you, and you're not going to do anything to anybody else. But if you lack self-esteem, self-respect, and self-worth, and it's given that lack is given to you by the society you live in, you don't care if you get into harm's way.
Hmm.
And therefore, you don't care if you inflict harm on others. And that's where the issue comes in.
The great actor Edward James Olmos is our guest. You know, you're not crazy with how people use the word race. What is it about the use of that word that bothers you?
Well, race has always been a unifying word. There's only one race, and that's the human race, period. And then about 600 years ago, we started to use the word, we being the human species, started because it wasn't Latinos that did it.
Yeah.
It was actually Europeans that started to use the word race as a cultural determinant. The white race, the black race, the brown race.
Defining people.
Yes,
yeah.
By their race. Cultures mm-hmm. by their race. And, you know, everybody says it's okay to do that. It means an awful lot to a lot of people in different ways. No. Race, there's only one race. That's a human race. Inside of that, there are wonderful cultures. There are African cultures. There are Caucasian cultures, Latino cultures, indigenous cultures, Asian cultures. But you cannot tell me that the Japanese are like the Chinese. You cannot tell me that the Irish are like the English. You cannot tell me that the Guatemalan is like the Mexican. You can't. They're different cultures inside of the human race. Now, the difficulty is because we've divided ourselves, and the reason that they use the word race as a cultural determinant was so it'd be easier for us to kill one another. It'd be easier for you to kill me and me to kill you because you are a different race.
Mm-hmm.
You can't kill your own race.
Mm-hmm.
So they started to divide us, and they continue to do that, and they've been teaching it for over 600 years. And I think that, and look, I'm not the only one that's saying this. It's been going on for centuries. People have been trying to get people to understand that there's one race, that's a human race. And inside of the human race, there are different cultures, ethnicities. Yes, but there's only one race. Stop using the word race as a cultural determinant, and you're going to see a lot of different things happening. It's just like, do you like your great-grandmother?
Yeah.
Do you like your great-great-grandmother?
Yeah.
Even though you never...
Who was she?
Yeah, exactly. You never knew who she was.
Right.
Or your great-great-grandmother. Do you like your great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmother?
Yeah.
Okay. How about your great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmother and grandfather? He was pretty great too. Do you like him?
Yes.
And her?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Whatever.
You don't even know who they are.
I have no idea.
You have no idea, but you know that they existed.
Mm-hmm.
If they didn't exist, you wouldn't exist. Where do you think they came from?
Yeah.
Come on, Stephen.
Well,
go back, 200,000 years. Where did your parents come from?
Well, Europe and then ultimately Africa.
Thank you.
Where we've done shows on that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ultimately,
so,
all the way back.
Okay.
Right?
All the way back.
We all come back from the same place.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And
how am I doing? Yeah.
Really good. Excellent, because you come from Africa. I come from Africa. Everybody in this world comes
from Africa.
Excuse me. And there are people right now that are pulling their hair out of their teeth. I'm not kidding you. They're angry. They're biting themselves because they're saying to themselves, excuse me. All right. You might believe that, but I don't believe I come from Africa. My parents don't come from Africa.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Humanity comes from Africa. Okay? That being said, if you don't embrace the African culture, you're not embracing your relatives.
Yeah.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, maybe you didn't like your grandmother. Maybe you didn't like your great-grandfather. So, obviously, you don't like your lineage. Fine. Don't like your lineage. But don't not understand and accept the fact that we are all African first, period.
Because it's a fact.
It's a fact. I'm not talking, very difficult. What we're talking about right now, people are actually turning off their radios. But the reason
thanks
that
a lot.
Turning, yeah, the yeah. reason that they're
appreciate
turning
that.
Off, you invited me.
Yeah,
I didn't, I'll leave now if you want. But the reason that they're turning off their radio is because they're frustrated. They're frustrated. And they don't want to go through this frustration. And the reason is because they have no preparation for it.
Yeah.
Because their mythology does not allow them. Do you know what happens when I go speak at, say, at the Navajo reservation or the Apache reservation, when I get invited and I tell their children that they come from Africa, you know what they do to me?
Tell me.
Ed, our mythology, the Almighty, when he created the earth and he created the Bear Clan and the Eagle Clan and the river and the mountain and the ocean, he created humankind here in Montana or here in Colorado or here in Kansas. We don't come from any place. The Creator created us here.
And you say...
That's their mythology.
Yeah.
I said, it's okay. I understand that that's your mythology and that's what you really believe in. Well, but I'm just here to tell you that you're really extricating your Asian roots that were so influential in the concept of the understanding of indigenous people.
Yeah.
That we come from Asia. Every Indian that is from this, whether it be Olmec, Maya, Olmeca, Mexica, whether it be Apache or Arapaho, they all come from Asia. There were Asian roots that came across the Bering Strait. And the people say, wait a minute, Eddie, they could have come from the south. Yeah, they could have come from the south. And they could have come from the north. Basically, yeah. The oldest remnants we've ever found on the history of this continent so far was in the Bering Strait. It was 40,000-year-old sediment that they found a fire camp. And then there was, dishes, and there were things that the people were using around a campfire. And they found it, and it was in 40,000-year-old sediment. We thought the oldest sediment that we had found anything in was in Tucson. It was 11,700 years ago. But now here we are 40,000. So we're over 40,000 years here. So when somebody looks at me and says, Eddie, go home, I say, are you kidding? I've been here for 40,000 years. I wonder, what boat did you come over on?
Well, Ed, you are known in this business as a great interview. I really appreciate you taking some time. You were just terrific.
Thank you, Steve.
What a great conversation.
Bless your heart. Thank you so much, guys.
Edward James Almos has been our guest. It's time for a break. When we come back here, why did business journalism fall so short in the run-up to the economic collapse of 2008?
Let me tell you one thing.
Yes, answer that question for me.
Well, the reason is because basically we didn't believe them. There was a lot of people talking about it. There were people talking about it, but nobody really could understand it. I talked about it last night.
A few people were talking about it, but not enough people were talking about it.
But it's okay. That's up to us now.
I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR.